I wanted to talk a little bit about the idea of soulmates. How many of you have heard of soulmates? How many of you think that your husband or wife is your soulmate? Okay, you're going to be mad at me after this sermon. Well, the soulmate, if you haven't noticed, the idea that God has chosen a specific person, made them for you, with you in mind. And unfortunately, this idea is not very biblical. It's kind of like the idea of angels looking like tall blonde people and there being three wise men and one of them being named Balthazar and, you know, other things along that vein that have been changed a little bit by popular culture. And I'm not going to go without reading a Bible verse that has to do with this today, but I wanted to talk about it a little bit first. There are an awful lot of people who think that every single person has a person made specifically for them. And I never grabbed my microphone, did I? I'll use this one.
There we go.
That they have a person made specifically for them at the beginning of the world. God planned out all of our relationships ahead of time. And there's just one little problem with that. It's that if that was the truth, then there would not be any divorces. Because God would have maneuvered us directly into the path of each person that we are supposed to be with, and he would have made it so we would fall in love with them and get married and et cetera, et cetera. The reason that we, in a lot of churches, talk like this, like, oh, God has somebody just for you, John, is probably not Wanda. No. God has somebody just for each person. He has a chosen person, and you have to just wait on the Lord, and he will bring that person to you, and you can just sit there and let that person come, and God will just drop them right in your lap. Is that how it works usually, dating? You know, you just sit somewhere, and a person will just fall through the window right into your... Well, some people, that's actually how it happens, but that usually only happens in romantic comedies. And one of the reasons I think that we talk about this like that happening a lot in churches is because we've all kind of Hallmark channeled church. We've kind of turned the Bible into this idea of God's love letter to humanity, and all that it has in it is just the lovey-dovey stuff. The only things in the Bible are these unicorns and rainbows and sunshine and happiness, and that everything plotted out. But if you look at, say, Proverbs 31, what's Solomon say at the very beginning of Proverbs 31? Of course, Solomon, if he had had a special soulmate, he wouldn't have needed 900 wives, but or 300 wives, 600 concubines. There had to be some jealousy there. But if he had had a soulmate, he wouldn't have needed all those people. You think David had a soulmate? Was it Bathsheba? That ended up on the rooftop bathing, and then he had her husband killed so that he could be with her? Well, some people argue yes, actually. Some people argue that she was his soulmate. Why? Because if you follow the lineage of Jesus, Bathsheba was his great, 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 great. And so obviously it was in God's plan for David to fall sexually and be with Bathsheba. I don't like to think that God put them together like that, that he forced David to kill somebody to be with her, and that, you know, they had to have that adulterous relationship. Even David got punished for that relationship by God, if you look in the story where that happens. But God uses even the fallen to make his plans come about. People get that backwards, that God causes the fall to make his will done. No, God uses the fall. But we have this romanticized notion of what love and happiness is in the church. And we have this romanticized notion of what love and happiness is in the world too. And the church is supposed to be influencing the culture and not the other way around, but that's rarely how it happens. One thing is that we have a
kind of skewed version where I think how it basically goes down is a wife turns to her husband or a girlfriend turns to her boyfriend and says, aren't we just destined to be together? And the guy wanting to stay in the relationship goes, oh, yes, absolutely. And thus, a new idea is born. Nowhere in the Bible do you ever find two people who are put together by God other than perhaps the prophet Amos. Or wait, no, Hosea, not Amos. The prophet Hosea is told to go marry a woman that he knows is a prostitute and then to have children with her. And I am pretty sure that that is not a literal go marry this person. I'm pretty sure that it was a thing where all of it was an object lesson, a metaphor, because the names of all the people are like the wife is named God does not love, and the children are named, you know, God's grace is gone from this place, and something else. Now, all the kids' names are really bad names. It'd be like if I named all my kids like Stupid 1 and Stupid 2 or something like that. You know, no parent would normally do that. I say normally. There are some weird parents out there. Like there's a couple of twins named Lemon Jello and Orange Jello. So, but love is supposed to grow over time. If you go back to the Jewish way of doing things, when the Bible was penned, it was pretty much all arranged marriages. I talked about this a few weeks ago when I talked about love and marriage. But it was all arranged marriages. The basic idea was that you didn't really know the person you were going to marry all that well. And if you're in one of the cities, you definitely didn't know them all that well. Your parents might know them. Your parents probably knew the other parents, and they got together for some kind of economic or political alliance, sort of like how royal weddings were done for a very long time. And the idea with this is that you were going to get together, and you were going to spend time learning each other. And you were going to spend time falling in love. But you didn't start in love. And like I talked a few weeks ago, the divorce rate in countries where they still do this is in the 1 to 3% range. Now, it might also have something to do with the country's laws being very skewed towards trying not to have divorces and really stigmatizing them. But, and in America, we try to make it pretty much as easy as possible. But people did not fall in and out of love the way they do here in the United States. What is a great example of this is probably the Broadway musical, Fiddler on the Roof. How many of you know the song, Do You Love Me, from Fiddler on the Roof? Do you love me? What? What's love got to do with it? Basically, her answer is, why would you ask me that? That's silly. And it kind of characterizes the whole idea of what that musical is about, but it's also what the culture was about. It's like, who cared whether you were in love or not? You came to depend upon each other, to care about each other, to serve one another in God's love itself, and you never stopped to ask the question, am I still in love with this person, or am I starting to be in love with this person? You know, I love Beauty and the Beast, where they're together for a whole day, and suddenly Belle is singing about, oh, there's something there I didn't notice before. I think it's love. And she's literally been with him for one afternoon so far, if you go with the timeline of how long the movie is. She's only there for him, you know, she tries to escape, they end up getting good together, and they get in a snowball fight, the end, you know. And it's love, and they're ready to spend the rest of their lives together because of that day. What happened with Mary and Joseph? They were in an arranged marriage, and they were supposed to be together for a year before the actual marriage happened. And do everything together except that which produces children. Nowhere in there is it ever mentioned, and if you find them not to be suitable, you can kick them out. In the laws of Moses, all you had to do as a man was say, I don't really love you anymore, and that was it. And Jesus came and said, what God has put together, let no man separate. If you cannot hold it together, too bad. It's a sin to release the other person. And the disciples were so put upon by this that they said, well, if that's the case, then nobody should get married. Because they had made a culture where it was just that easy. But even in that culture, it wasn't done that often because the culture stigmatized it so much. I want to read to you 1 Corinthians chapter 13. Many of you probably know this one by heart. Now I will show you the most excellent way. If I speak in tongues of men and of angels, but have not love, I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have a faith that can move mountains, but have not love, I am nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and surrender my body to the flames, but have not love, I gain nothing. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It is not rude. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices in the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails. But where there are prophecies, they will cease. Where there are tongues, they will be stilled. Where there is knowledge, it will pass away. For we know in part and we prophesy in part. But when perfection comes, the imperfect disappears. When I was a child, I talked like a child. I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. When I became a man, I put childish ways behind me. Now we see but a poor reflection, as in a mirror. Then we shall see face to face. Now I know in part, then I shall know fully, even as I am fully known. And now these three remain, faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love. We have a whole messed up idea of what love is in the United States. I talked about it a few times. There's a reason we have literally millions of love songs, poems, books, self-help books, and advice columns related to love and what love is, when the Bible has already summed it up completely. Why do we have so many different variations on what love is? Because people are always unhappy with that definition. Because at some point it asks you not to do something. And we're selfish. We want to do what we want to do. You know, it's like, I don't know how many sitcom or comedy, romantic comedy movies you've ever seen or books you've ever read about it, but have you ever witnessed or been part of an argument where one or the other partner in a relationship starts bringing up all of the past problems that the other person has done in the relationship? You know, well, 2 years ago you said this about my mother, and I'm going to, you know, that kind of thing. We're not supposed to keep a record of wrongs. I've said, you know, the great way to have a wonderful relationship is to have no memory. And the best way to ruin it is to remember everything. It says it does not boast. Well, how much of relationships is trying to make the other person realize how great you are? That's boasting. The entire first part of it where he's talking about if I speak with the tongues of angels and all this stuff, but I have not love, I'm just a resounding gong. Being right can kill a relationship really fast. Especially when both of you think that's you. Why do you think we have such a diametrically opposed political system in the United States? Both sides think they're right. We're not entirely sure if either of them are. Love is supposed to grow over time through acts of what is described in 1 Corinthians 13. Bless you, Everett. Love is supposed to grow as you do service for each other, as you lay down yourself for the other person. And not because you expect them to do the same, but because you are following the commands of Jesus in that that's what you're supposed to do. It's not something like, I give, you will give. It's that I give because I give. My brother once held the door open for somebody going into a bank. And it was a woman. And he holds the door open and she goes, I'm not a lady. And my brother says, I don't do it because you're a lady. I do it because I'm a gentleman. We do not do things based on how somebody else will respond to it. We don't do things based on what reward we're going to get back, or at least we're not supposed to. We don't do things based on what benefit it is supposed to be for us as followers of Jesus. We do it because we're followers of Jesus. Whether we get trod upon after we help someone or not, we are still blessed because we get our reward from above, not from here. Jesus talked about the Pharisees and the priests who went out into the street and proclaimed loud prayers on the corner so that everybody could hear them, and fasted with torn clothes and dirt all over their heads and all this kind of stuff. And he said, you know, those people who do it where everybody can see them have already received their reward. And the reward was coming from this world. And he says to us, when we pray, we're supposed to go off and do it in private because God will see and reward from above. And it's the same way with our relationships. I talked about a couple weeks ago about what you do if you're with somebody who is not treating you as well as you wish they could, who is not maybe even a believer. And what God says to do about that is love them even harder. Work, work, work to try to bring them to salvation and to care for them. But what happens too much in our lives and in our churches and in our nation is people think, oh, this other person is not the person that I thought they were going to be, or I haven't been able to change them into the person I hoped they would be. I guess I'll leave and go find the soulmate that God obviously has planned for me. Obviously, this person isn't it. I have heard that excuse from Christians so many times. The idea that obviously God has somebody else planned out for me. And in one case, it was somebody else's husband. A little Cliff Notes version of the Bible here. God will not bring you someone else's husband or wife as your soulmate. Just not how it works. If there were soulmates at all, really. I am convinced that two people from the ends of the earth could be thrown together on a desert island, a man and a woman, and that they could fall in love if at least one of them was acting as a Christian towards the other. And it doesn't matter what relationship they might have had before. It even doesn't matter what language they speak. As long as they are serving the other person the way that it's laid out here in 1 Corinthians chapter 13, love would grow there. And it matters. The idea of soulmates is simply an excuse a lot of the time. But, you know, if you were one of the people who raised your hand when I started this sermon and said the other person is your soulmate, well, keep acting like it is in 1 Corinthians chapter 13, and it'll be true by the end of your relationship. By the time we go to heaven, you'll be made it up there. Except for Jesus said we're not married or given in marriage in heaven. So we'll have to figure out how that works. Every once in a while, Katie and I have that conversation where we go, we're still going to remember each other and like live together and stuff like that once we get to heaven, right? I said, I'll ask my other six wives. I'm kidding. I only have four. Jody just said after the service. Whack! I am convinced that all the relationships that we have on this world will carry over into the next. Man, I sure hope my dogs are there. All right. What, you don't want your dogs? Oh, okay. Well, too bad for you. But the strangest thing that I have seen is that people who actually believe in this idea of soulmates will wake up next to their spouse and roll over and go, oh, I don't remember that face when we were dating. Or something like that. And I know for sure that Katie would not have found me attractive if I was this heavy when we were both in college. And probably would not have wanted to go out with me when we started. And I'm glad that our love has grown over time to overlook that, even though I'm still going to the gym, honey, I promise. But at the same time, I've seen people who are in abusive relationships, where the husband or boyfriend, you know, beats the woman unmercifully, and she continues to go back to him, even though everyone that knows her and knows what's going on cries out that she should not remain in the relationship. And yet some people get divorced because the guy put the silverware in the dishwasher the wrong way. And I wonder what it is that makes one so connected and one so disconnected. But I think I've actually found the answer. It's that refining fire that God puts us through. It's that when we are in the midst of trials, everything becomes stronger about us. And when we are in the midst of ease, it becomes easier to just slough off everything. And so I'm thankful sometimes for the trials that he puts us through. I still wish that those women would get help and get out of those relationships. I'm not advocating for that at all. But it just always marvels me. And so when I think of this idea of soulmates, and I think God puts us together, very truly. He has ordained our steps, and he has worked in our hearts to build love for each person that we are around and that we are connected to through Jesus Christ. And that through the messages of Jesus, through the love that he shows, and through how he shows us what love is, we can bind our soul to another person through those things. But it's not that God brought you together. It's that he's bringing you together as you march towards the heavenly kingdom. That is where the idea of soulmates, I think, can find purchase. Not in the dating and getting married part, but in the living your lives together. And if you are truly children of God, you will do as Jesus said and let no man separate you. Because Jesus says that no person on earth should be able to separate what God has put together. And he also says in Romans 8, Paul writing to the Romans, he says in Romans 8 that there is no power on earth that can separate us from the love of God. But we all know that even if we're held in the hands of God, we can choose to jump out. And people choose to do that with their relationships every day. And I wish very strongly that all person who ever enter in to those relationships would find souls twined together, would find that love continuing to grow in their hearts for each other. And whenever I pray for marriages across the world to be strengthened and for marriages to find that love, that 1 Corinthians chapter 13 love for each other. And that all those people would use that strength that God has given them in union, because two sticks put right next to each other are harder to break than one. And take that strength and use it to overcome all the trials that will stop us from reaching the heavenly kingdom together. Amen.